The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. That can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include global worker shortages may keep food prices rising, and Automation Nation. Across the world, a dearth of workers is shaking up food supply chains. In Vietnam, the army is assisting with the rice harvest. In the UK, farmers are dumping milk because there are no truckers to collect it. Brazil's Robusta coffee beans took 120 days to reap this year, rather than the usual 90. And American meatpackers are trying to lure new employees with Apple Watches while fast food chains raise the price of burgers and burritos. Whether it's fruit pickers, slaughterhouse workers, truckers, warehouse operators, chefs, or waiters, the global food ecosystem is buckling due to the shortage of staff. Supplies are getting hit, and some employers are forced to raise wages at a double-digit pace. That's threatening to push food prices, already heated by soaring commodities and freight costs, even higher. Prices in August were up 33% from the same month last year, according to an index compiled by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. The coronavirus pandemic has helped spark a labor shortfall for many parts of the economy, but the impact is particularly stark in food and agriculture, which are among the world's least automated industries. Food security is a sensitive issue in many parts of the world, and thin margins mean rising costs generally passed through to buyers, according to Boston Consulting Group. There are signs the labor shortfall is curbing supplies. In the U.S., wholesale distributors like Sysco Core and United Natural Foods, Inc., are reporting production delays and slowdowns for items ranging from bacon and cheese to coconut water and spices. In the U.K., some stores are running low on staples like bread and chicken, while McDonald's Core ran out of milkshakes in August. Shortages are hitting farms, processors, and restaurants alike. Malaysia, the world's number two palm oil producer, has lost about 30% of potential output of the edible oil used in everything from chocolate to margarine. Shrimp production in southern Vietnam, one of the world's top exporters, has dropped by 60% to 70% from before the pandemic. Even as restaurants and other businesses reopen in the U.S. and parts of Europe, boosting demand for goods such as meat and bottled drinks, the Delta variant is spreading in places like Southeast Asia, curbing primary production. Other long-established pandemic effects are still causing problems, too. COVID outbreaks continue to crop up in meat and fish processing plants, forcing temporary closures. And border restrictions in countries from the UK to Thailand are limiting the supply of migrant workers. In some places, the scramble for staff is compounded by local issues such as difficult and dangerous farm work conditions caused by a record U.S. heat wave or the disruption of Brexit. As a result, employers face another hurdle. Workers have plenty of options. Employment in the food supply chain can certainly be tough. Whether it's back-breaking strawberry picking, insecure slaughterhouse work, or the fast-paced, high-pressure environment of a restaurant kitchen, many jobs are physically taxing, short-term, poorly paid, or a combination of all three. John Devaney, president of the Washington State Tree Fruit Association, acknowledges that work such as fruit picking is demanding. You are picking fruit and carrying it up and down ladders. So if your alternative is pushing buttons on a cash register, that might be more appealing, he said. Higher salaries and perks can sweeten the deal. Chipotle Mexican Grill, Inc. recently raised U.S. menu prices by as much as 4% after increasing average pay to $15 an hour. But often money is not enough. Workers are increasingly demanding greater protection from the coronavirus as well as higher wages, according to Sonny Verghese, CEO of agricultural trading giant Olam International Limited. Next, Automation Nation. Do we need humans for that job? Use of technology in service sector is up after COVID. Ask for a roast beef sandwich at an Arby's drive-thru east of Los Angeles, and you may be talking to Tori, an artificially intelligent voice assistant that will take your order and send it to the line cooks. It doesn't call sick, said Amir Siddiqui, whose family's installed the AI voice at its Arby's franchise this year in Ontario, California. It doesn't get corona, and the reliability of it is great. The pandemic didn't just threaten Americans' health when it slammed the U.S. in 2020. It may also have posed a long-term threat to many of their jobs. Faced with worker shortages and higher labor costs, companies are starting to automate service sector jobs that economists once considered safe, assuming that machines couldn't easily provide the human contact they believe customers would demand. Past experience suggests that such automation waves eventually create more jobs than destroy, but that they also disproportionately wipe out less skilled jobs that many low-income workers depend on. Resulting, growing pains for the U.S. economy could be severe. If not for the pandemic, Siddiqui probably wouldn't have bothered investing in new technology that could alienate existing employees and some customers. But it's gone smoothly, he said. Basically, there's less people needed, but those folks are now working in the kitchen and other areas. Ideally, automation can deploy workers into better and more interesting work, so long as they get the appropriate technical training, said Johan Monis, an economist at the University of Redlands. But although that's happening now, it's not moving quickly enough, he said. Worse, an entire class of service jobs created when manufacturing began to deploy more automation may now be at risk. The robots escaped the manufacturing sector and went into the much larger service sector, he said. I regarded contact jobs as safe. I was completely taken by surprise. Improvement in robot technology allows machines to do many tasks that previously required people. Tossing pizza dough, transporting hospital linens, inspecting gauges, sorting goods, the pandemic accelerated their adoption. Robots, after all, can't get sick or spread disease, nor do they request time off to handle unexpected child care emergencies. Economists at the International Monetary Fund found that past pandemics had encouraged firms to invest in machines in ways that could boost productivity but also kill low-skilled jobs. Our results suggest that the concerns about the rise of the robots amid the COVID-19 pandemic seem justified, they wrote in a January paper. The consequences could fall most heavily on the less educated women who disproportionately occupy the low and mid-wage jobs most exposed to automation and to viral infections. Those jobs include sales clerks, administrative assistants, cashiers, and aides in hospitals, and those who take care of the sick and elderly. Employers seem eager to bring on the machines. A survey last year by the nonprofit World Economic Forum found that 43% of companies plan to reduce their workforce as a result of new technology. Since the second quarter of 2020, business investment in equipment has grown 26%, more than twice as fast as the overall economy. The fastest growth is expected in the roving machines that clean the floors of supermarkets, hospitals, and warehouses. According to the International Federation of Robotics, a trade group, the same group also expects an uptick in sales of robots that provide shoppers with information or deliver room service orders in hotels. Restaurants have been among the most visible robot adopters. In late August, for instance, the salad chain Sweetgreen announced it was buying kitchen robotic startup Spice, which makes a machine that cooks up vegetables and grains and spouts them into bowls. It's not just robots either. Software and AI-powered services are on the rise as well. Starbucks has been automating the behind-the-scenes work of keeping track of a store's inventory. More stores have moved to self-checkout. Scott Lawton, CEO of the Arlington, Virginia-based restaurant chain Bart Taco, was having trouble last fall getting servers to return to his restaurants when they reopened during the pandemic. So he decided to do without them. With the help of a software firm, his company developed an online ordering and payment system customers would use over their phones. Diners now simply scan a barcode at the center of each table to access a menu and order their food without waiting for a server. Workers bring food and drink to their table, and when they're done eating, customers pay over their phone and leave. The innovation has shaved the number of staff, but workers aren't necessarily worse off. Each Bartgo location, there are 21, now has up to 8 assistant managers, roughly double the pre-pandemic total. Many are former servers, and they roam among the tables to make sure everyone has what they need. They are paid annual salaries starting at $55,000 rather than hourly wages. Tips are now shared among all the other employees, including dishwashers, who now typically earn $20 an hour or more, far higher than their pre-pandemic pay. We don't have the labor shortages that you're reading about on the news, Lawton said. The uptick in automation has not stalled a stunning rebound in the U.S. jobs market, at least so far. The U.S. economy lost a staggering 22.4 million jobs in March and April 2020 when the pandemic gale hit the U.S. Hiring has since bounced back briskly. Employers have brought back 17 million jobs since April 2020. In June, they posted a record 10.1 million job openings and are complaining that they can't find enough workers. Behind the hiring boom is a surge in spending by consumers, many of whom got through the crisis in unexpectedly good shape financially, thanks to both federal relief checks and, in many cases, savings accumulated by working from home and skipping the daily commute. Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, expects employers are likely to be scrambling for workers for a long time. For one thing, many Americans are taking their time returning to work because they are still worried about COVID-19 health risk and child care problems. others because of generous federal unemployment benefits set to expire nationwide September 6. In addition, large numbers of baby boom workers are retiring. The labor market is going to be very, very tight for the foreseeable future, Zandi said. For now, the short-term benefits of the economic snapback are overwhelming any job losses from the automation, whose effects tend to show up gradually over a period of years. That may not last. Last year, researchers at the University of Zurich and University of British Columbia found that the so-called jobless recoveries of the past 35 years, in which economic output rebounded from recessions faster than employment, could be explained by the loss of jobs vulnerable to automation. Despite strong hiring since the middle of last year, the U.S. economy is still 5.3 million jobs short of what it had in February 2020. And Lydia Bossoir, lead U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, calculated last month that 40% of the missing jobs are vulnerable to automation, especially those in food preparation, retail sales, and manufacturing. Some economists worry that automation pushes workers into lower-paid positions. Darren Acemoglu, an economist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Pascual Respo of Boston University estimated in June that up to 70% of the stagnation in U.S. wages between 1980 and 2016 could be explained by machine replacing humans doing routine tasks. Many of the jobs that get automated were at the middle of the skill distribution, as Acemoglu said. They don't exist anymore, and the workers that used to perform them are now doing lower-skilled jobs. Next, CEOs are dooming business travel maybe for good. Business travel, as we've known it, is a thing of the past. From Pfizer, Michelin, LG Electronics to HSBC Holdings, Hershey, Invesco, and Deutsche Bank, businesses around the world are signaling that innovative new communications tools are making many pre-pandemic era trips history. A Bloomberg survey of 45 large businesses in the U.S., Europe, and Asia showed that 84% plan to spend less on travel post-pandemic. Most of the respondents cutting travel budgets see reductions of 20% to 40%, with about 2 in 3 slashing both internal and external in-person meetings. The ease and efficiency of virtual software, cost savings, and lower carbon emissions were the primary reasons cited for the cutbacks, according to the Global Business Travel Association. Spending on corporate trips could slide to as low as $1.24 trillion by 2024, from a pre-pandemic peak in 2019 of $1.43 trillion. Business travel has forever changed, Greg Hayes, CEO of jet engine maker Raytheon Technologies, said in a Bloomberg radio interview in July. About 30% of normal commercial air traffic is corporate-related, but only half of that is likely mandatory, he said. While the market may eventually recover, sophisticated communication technologies have really changed our thinking in terms of productivity, Hayes said. Having saved billions from slashed travel budgets during the pandemic, with only a marginal impact on operations, companies, banks, consulting firms, and government offices, will be hard-pressed to explain why they'd return to their old ways. Kit Kat chocolate bar maker Hershey said the pandemic showed that online meetings were a more efficient use of time and financial resources. Companies like Pfizer are grappling with questions about what one accomplishes with a trip that can't be done virtually. Tina Quattlebaum, its Director of Global Travel Operations, said at the GBTA Mid-Year Virtual Summit in July, "We don't think business travel will ever return to 2019 levels," said Will Hockley, the global head of travel and leisure at KPMG. Corporates are looking at their bottom line, their environmental commitments, the demand from employees for more flexible working, and thinking, why do I have to bring that back? That's a blow to the airline and hospitality industries, already among the biggest casualties of the pandemic. Business travelers who buy premium class or more expensive refundable tickets range in as much as three-quarters of airlines' pre-pandemic profits, while accounting for only 12% of seats, according to PwC. The hotel sector, which draws about two-thirds of its revenue from business travelers, could see a dip of as much as 18% by 2022, as virtual meetings replace 27% of corporate travel volumes, a Morgan Stanley study shows. The world's biggest airlines collectively lost $126 billion in 2020 and are set to lose $48 billion this year, according to the International Air Transport Association, their lobby. As they wrestle with those losses and the huge debts ranked up after coronavirus punctured a decade-long boom in travel, the last thing airlines need is corporate customers cutting back. Carriers like Lufthansa, Air France KLM, Delta Airlines, America Airlines, with thousands of staff and overhead to support, depend on business travelers returning. The effect of the structural decrease in business travel will be enormous for the industry, and especially for the airlines that are the most exposed to this category of traveler, said Pascal Fabre, managing director in Paris for Alex Partners, a consulting firm. Airlines are trying to stay optimistic. Delta CEO Ed Bastian said about 80% of the carrier's large corporate clients have indicated that as much as 90% of their pre-COVID business travel will eventually return. Next, shortages of supplies and workers to delay Gulf rebuilding. Joe Sobol, owner of Big Easy Construction in New Orleans, has bad news for homeowners who have been calling about roofs damaged by Hurricane Ida or to get an update on renovations that were scheduled before the storm ripped through an area. The job will cost a lot more than usual and take much longer, too. Ida slammed into the Gulf Coast, then took its destruction to the northeast at a time when building contractors were already grappling with severe shortages of workers and depleted supply chains. The damage inflicted by Ida has magnified those challenges. The struggle to find enough skilled workers and materials will likely drive up cost, complicate planning, and delay construction for months. My expectation, said Allie Wolf, chief economist at the real estate research firm Zonda, is that it only gets worse from here. The challenges facing construction companies stem from what happened after the nation endured a brutal but brief recession when the viral pandemic erupted in March 2020. The economy rebounded far faster and stronger than anyone expected. Business of all kinds were caught off guard by a surge in customer demand that flowed from an increasingly robust economic recovery. Workers and supplies were suddenly in short supply. For months now, across the economy, businesses have been scrambling to acquire enough supplies and recall workers they had furloughed during the recession. Construction companies have been particularly affected. Among building executives, Zonda survived last month. 93% complained of supply shortages. 74% said they lacked enough workers. And that was before Ida struck. Natural disasters do cause a strain on building materials, reconstruction materials, and on labor, Wolf said. The difference today is that the entire supply chain has been battered even before Ida's occurrence. You really have all of these things hitting at exactly the same time. Frankly, the last thing the supply chain needed was extra strain. The result is that the cost of materials and supplies has been surging. Combined prices for windows, doors, roofing, and other building products jumped 13% in the first 6 months of this year, according to the Labor Department data. Before 2020, such aggregate prices would typically rise a bit more than 1% annually on average in the first 6 months of a year. Prices for steel mill products were up more than twofold in July from a year earlier. Gypsum products, which are needed for drywall, partitions, ceiling tiles, and the like, were up 22%. Henry Desposito, who leads construction research at the real estate service company JLL, said the toughest challenge in rebuilding now is the delays in acquiring drywall, glass, steel, aluminum, and other materials. A lot of the materials that you would need for any project, and especially something this urgent, you're not going to be able to get on site for weeks or months, Desposito said. Sobel has ridden out some of the biggest hurricanes to strike Louisiana, including Betsy in 1965, Camille in 1979, Katrina in 2005, and Ida. On Friday, he received a text from a client who had hired the Big Easy for home renovations. The client wanted to know whether the initial cost estimate still stood. I said, you can probably add 10%, Sobel said. And now the project will likely take 9 months instead of six. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.